This is Beyond the News.
This barbaric and wanton destruction of people's means of livelihood by the state government call for serious prayers by well-meaning persons, as the people are now counting their losses in billions of naira. This has now paralyzed and brought the commercial activities in Kano, Kentukwari, and overwhelmed by famous market and many others.
This is Beyond the News. My name is Ayu Adio. Welcome.
In a surprising turn of events, the new government in Kano has initiated the demolition of buildings on government land that were allegedly sold during the tenure of the previous administration led by Abdullahi Ganduje. This action has ignited a heated debate amongst the residents and has sparked an array of opinions across the state. The demolished property on Sunday in question was a three-story building with a staggering 90 shops located in the racecourse at the Nasarawa GRA. The current governor, Abba Yusuf, personally oversaw the demolition, signifying a firm stance on the issue. The presence of the governor during this exercise sent shockwaves throughout the community as he was accompanied by none other than the police commissioner, Mohammed Gumel. Governor Yusuf's decision to demolish structures erected on government land sold by the previous administration was not an impulsive one. He had made promises to address this issue during his campaign, and now he's making good on those promises. These demolished shops, according to reports, were an extension of the racecourse field, raising questions about the legitimacy of their construction and subsequent sale. This development, however, has certainly stirred emotions among residents, some of whom have taken advantage of the situation. Reports also suggest that instances of looting and chaos in the aftermath of the demolition have followed. This raises intriguing questions. Should the current government be taking such aggressive actions against the previous administration's decisions? What does this mean for the residents who invested in those properties? And most importantly, what does this signify for the future of land governance and accountability in Kano State? I'm joined by journalist Aliyu Airu to shed light on the issues that have been engulfing Kano State in the last 1 week. So good evening, Aliyu. Please talk to us about the political situation in Kano. There's a new governor in town, and it would seem that the new governor is on a vengeance mission. It looks like he's demolishing buildings, he's seizing properties. What's the reality on ground in Kano like, and how are the citizens in Kano taking the actions of the new governor?
Okay, number one, let me clarify this one. I don't think that the governor is on a vengeance mission. I think he had campaigned about that. He said that wherever public properties were sold, you know, illegally by the previous administration, he would recover it. He mentioned that in several of his campaigns, and it was really obvious to the people of Kano State that he would do that. But many, you know, from the opposition and the many people were thinking it would not be possible because some of the buildings were new and some of them were multi-story buildings. But he made it clear that he would restore the buildings that were done in cemeteries, in school premises, in, you know, other places that were illegally or were not properly sold by the previous administration. So he campaigned based on that, and he came really prepared and energetic, and he started doing what he promised to do. And the political climate in Kano State so far, I think it's divided into three. Number one, by those supporters of the governor, who were thinking that we actually vote for this man to do this thing, and he is doing it, and we are okay with it. This is number one. And secondly, there are people who are saying, who are from the opposition, who are saying that he shouldn't just do that. He should, you know, draw a red line so that anybody who comes and start erecting an illegal structure in the future could be arrested by those who had already done it, they could be maybe allowed to go away with it. This is mostly coming from the opposition side. And then there are those who are neutral, who are saying that, yes, the governor has a right to destroy all the properties, but for those, he should give them notice, you know, like he should notify them before he could just go on and give an executive order saying that you will either demolish properties or you will confiscate them from him. Even before that, there were a lot of problems with the previous administration in the way it distributed lands belonging to the government or belonging to the Sekano state. And number one, there were a lot of properties erected on waterways that caused flooding even last year. There were a lot of flooding that were unprecedented in the history of Kano last year. And there were buildings erected on sacred places like in cemeteries and mosques. And you know, Kano state is kind of a Sharia state where sacred places are considered of utmost importance. So the previous administration gave, you know, permission for private individuals to come and erect buildings along the roads, along the waterways, and in the cemeteries, and then in school premises, and even in the hospital premises. Some of the buildings were shops and event center, and they were erected in the hospital where, you know, a minimum noise is required. That is required for absolute silence in there. So this is the problem, and this is why I think the governor just went ahead and started doing this.
Interesting. So what do you think the political future of the former governor would look like? There are rumors that he's lobbying for a position in the Asiwaju government. Are we likely to see a repeat of what happened to Kwankwaso, wherein in the 4 years or in the 8 years of Ganduje, he hardly came into Kano state freely? Is Ganduje likely to have that kind of treatment from the new governor, or do you see him moving to a very high position in the government of Bola Ahmed Tinubu?
Okay, number one is that I don't think the current governor will do the same thing as the previous governor done to Kwankwaso. There is a bit of sanity in the new administration, and one of the promises the new administration has done to the people of Kano that it will abolish all political thuggery in the state. And you know, whenever these kind of things happen, it's not the police that prevent opposition, you know, figure from coming into the state. It's mostly some politicians who are sending political talks to block the political figure from coming in here. So if the new governor, if the new governor becomes successful in, you know, ending the political thuggery in Kano state, then there is no way he can stop the new governor or the former governor from coming into the state. That's number one. And secondly, for the you know, appointment to the former governor by the Asiwaju, that's President Bola Ahmed Tinubu, then I think this is something that may happen. Actually, there are only two camps of APC in Kano state. One is closer to Tinubu and the other one is closer to the Ganduje. And you know, Kano is a big state where there is likelihood that they'll be given two ministers, and then one of them will likely come from the other faction closer to Tinubu, that's Dambazo and his people, and then the other one either to Ganduje or somebody who may comment. So this may happen actually. And Ganduje is the biggest political APC political figure in Kano state, so there is maybe a likelihood that he may be given an appointment. As he said, he openly said that he is not looking for an appointment, but if he's given, he's ready to accept it.
Thank you, Aliyu, for speaking with us. It's a pleasure listening to your very insightful analysis. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Senegal's capital. capital, Dakar, filled with rubble after some of the most violent clashes the country has seen in at least 10 years between anti-government protesters and police. According to government officials, the death toll has now risen to 15, including the deaths of two security officers.
Clashes broke out on Sunday between Senegalese opposition supporters and police in parts of the capital, Dakar. The third day of the protests in the West African nation, sparked by the prosecution of an opposition leader. The police said that the death toll since Thursday has risen to 15, making the protest amongst the deadliest in recent decades. Two members of the security forces were among those killed, according to the presidency. After a day, protesters took to the streets again on Saturday evening, setting up barricades and burning rubbish in Dakar's HLM district. Police there and in Ungol residential neighborhood fired tear gases to disperse angry crowds. Gas stations and supermarkets were looted overnight on Friday, and several districts were strewn into rubble and burned tires. A water plant has also been targeted, said the Minister of Interior, Felix Diomi. I'm joined by Confidence Makari, a geopolitical expert and a columnist for the Avalon Daily, to discuss the burning issues in Dakar, Senegal. Thank you, Makari, for joining the conversation. So, I mean, clashes broke out on Saturday in Senegal with opposition supporters and the police in some sort of a fracas. What has led to these series of protests in Senegal? And do you see an end in sight anytime soon?
Okay, the violence in Senegal began at least 2 years ago. It started with the indictments of prominent opposition leader Ousmane Sonko of the PASTEF party, who was accused of sexual harassment by a woman. I think the sexual harassment suit was actually with, and he was taken to court. So he has been at the legal battle in the court processes since at least March 2021, when he was first presented in court. And then there have been several legal drama surrounding it. The first was, I think, the sentencing to about 2 months in jail in 2022 for, I think, insulting the president or something around that nature. And so the battle has been going ever since. Each time he is due to make an appearance in court, there are street clashes between the supporters and the police force, among other things. So on June 1st this year, he was finally convicted. And the interesting about his conviction is that he wasn't convicted of rape or sexual harassment as it was initially charged. He was convicted of something called corrupting the youth, according to the country's judicial system, the courts, And that has increased the pace and the pace of the clashes between the supporters and the police. Keep in mind that he was tear-test in absentia last week. So the thinking around is Mr. Sonko's legal troubles is that he's the viable challenger to a possible third term bid to President Macky Sall, given his immense popularity with the youth and, his involvement with politics. So Macky Sall has been president since 2012. He has won two terms between 2012 and 2019. So over the past few years, there has been concerns and rumors about a possible third term bid. In an interview granted with French newspaper and Express in March, he was asked the question if he was going to run for the third term. Macky Sall didn't confirm, he didn't deny. All he did was insist that even if he wanted to run, it was his right to run. So he said that at the appointed time, he will make his decision known first to his supporters before you make the decision known to his country. On the surface of it, the Senegalese constitution allows for two terms. And there is actually a precedent to the rumors surrounding President Macky Sall's rumored third term bid. His predecessor, Abdoulaye Wade, was president for about up to 2012, and this was the same issue the country had when Abdoulaye Wade tried to run for a third term. The matter reached the country's constitutional court, the highest court in the country, and the opposition brought appeals against the president when he was trying to run for a third term. Unluckily for them, the court threw out the motion to stop Abdoulaye Wade from running for a third term in January 2012. He went ahead to contest the election in February of that year, and he lost to Macky Sall. So I think even in that same situation in 2012, when the court ruled in favor of Abdoulaye Wade, it led to clashes, street protests with the police in Dakar and some other outlying towns. So we're seeing a repeat of 2012 and 2023. So that's exactly the background to the current violence we're witnessing in Senegal today.
So Senegal, has been seen as some beacon of democracy in the last few years. It's enjoyed a bit of political stability. Do you see this crisis going deeper, such that it could lead to a coup, as we have seen in Mali and Burkina Faso and a few other countries in Africa? Or do you see that this crisis will be resolved politically without the interference of the military? And finally, do you think that this could spill across the region and, lead to some sort of regional instability, if not properly nipped in the bud?
So when we started this conversation, you rightly pointed out that Senegal is usually a politically stable country. Then for Francophone Africa, it's just like a beacon of stability in the midst of so much instability in the wider sub-region. Bad behaviors are contagious. Although Senegal does not have a history of military involvement in domestic politics, it doesn't necessarily take away from the fact that the environment in which it currently operates is a highly volatile one. In Guinea, for instance, Alpha Condé was ousted just right after winning a fourth third term ambition, a third term bid rather, it was ousted by his country's military. And in Ivory Coast, which is not so far from Senegal, something happened in 2010 when President Laurent Gbagbo tried to just simply refuse to cede power after losing the other election to President Alassane Ouattara. And it devolved the country into a civil war. Right now, as of last year, there were still talks about, or 2 years ago rather, President Ouattara still ran for a third term against the wishes of many people in this country. But thankfully, it has not led the country into another round of violence. So one cannot really say that the Senegal's track record in keeping the military out of politics is going to hold. The thing about West Africa's young military dictators is that they operate like a cohort. The army officers who overthrew the government in Burkina Faso, in Guinea, in Mali are well acquainted with each other. And the coups on the continent, especially in West Africa, are contagious. Many of these officers view themselves from French-led and US-led operators, like what you can speak from Bakan in West Africa, as well as doing military trainings also abroad. You cannot rule out such motivation, if the current crisis persists. But it is one thing for us to look at Senegal's track record in ensuring democratic stability in the past, and then try to look at it with positive optimism going forward into the future. And for now, the situation is still fluid. I think we'll get a lot more clearer outlook if President Macky Sall comes out to expressly state his intentions to run for his third term. I think that's when lots of things become clearer. What was the last question again?
Yeah, so I wanted to know that if it's going to have some regional implication, spilling across all the neighboring countries within the region.
So the thing about Senegal, given its location, is that it acts like a guarantor for security in the region, especially for its closest neighbor, the Gambia, who has a political instability that up to 2017, the entire West Africa has to rally around and band together to save. So the impact of it prolonged political instability in Senegal would be felt first by the Gambia before it spills over to the wider region. And given the neighborhood where the region is, it is not a good one, because we have rampant insecurity, famous address crisis across the northern belts of the Sahel. You have unemployment, you have badly performing economies, and all of these issues have been exploited in major ways by affiliate groups working on behalf of Al-Qaeda and Islamic State. And we've seen a lot of the activities in places like Burkina Faso, in northern Mali, in Niger, and across the Sahel. So, Senegal, I would be too careful not to devolve into that kind of a violence that would allow external non-state actors to plunder. If it does, I don't think it's really going to be good, because for the past 1 year, we've noticed that many of the attacks that have been carried out on West African countries is increasingly coming towards coastal states. For the past 1 year, you see more coastal states getting attacked, places like Ghana, places like Togo, and places like Benin have seen more attacks than most. So if Senegal devolves into political violence that non-state actors try to get his spoil off, I do think that the entire region would have come full circle with the Islamic State, for instance, trying to make or gain inroads into Senegal.
Thank you, Confident Bakari, for speaking with us. It's a pleasure talking to you.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
This is Beyond the News.